everyone, and welcome to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two are one in the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, as well as their wonderful yearly writers' conference, please go to bnwa.org. Well, people, life is change. There's just no getting around that. You put one word on the page, make one gesture, speak one word, the world is changed, if only in a little tiny way, but changed is nonetheless. And it seems to me, as a person, you can either choose to flow with this evolutionary current or swim against it. And today's guest, suspense writer Greg Olson, chose the former. He started out as a newspaper man, a journalist, went into true crime stories, and then into suspense novels for adults, and now has transitioned, has evolved into a YA suspense writer, and did not mind it one little bit. He's having quite a bit of success with it, and now he has flowed right along to the show Author to Author, and he's here with me now. So, Greg, welcome to Author.
Hey, Bill, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure.
And I am flowing. I'm flowing right on down.
Are you good? Keep doing it. Keep doing it. You know, yesterday, Greg, we're broadcasting on the 4th of September, Tuesday, September 4th, and yesterday was Labor Day here in the United States. Did you labor yesterday, or did you just give yourself a day off?
Well, I actually labored a little bit in that I am preparing for my big book launch for Betrayal tonight.
Yeah. Oh,
so
right. Oh,
yeah, it's right in Port Gamble. I'm excited about that. The book is released today. And, you know, you've got to, when you're a writer and an author, you do have some help. There's no question about that. You know, there are editors and there are publicity people and all that. But, you know, somebody, you know, once told me it's not easy, and it isn't easy. And sometimes you have to do a lot of the stuff yourself. So
Yeah. That's
what I'm doing. I'm getting it all ready, and I'm excited about meeting the readers tonight.
You know, I have always said when I go and give talks, people, one question that always comes up is, should I self-publish or use traditional publishing? When I always talk about self-publishing, I always say, you know, the main thing about being a self-publisher is you really are a business person. You're having to do everything yourself, and you're just really have started a business. But even a writer like yourself, who has always published traditionally, you even are a bit of a small business owner, aren't you? Because you are the CEO of the little company that is Greg's Books.
Well, that's right, because, you know, I have had, you know, all my books have been published traditionally by New York publishing houses, but I know that, you know, if I want to get booked on a show or if I want to promote my book, I have better contacts for me than they do. So,
Yeah. That,
you know, I've had some great help, you know, with Splinter and Sterling, that's the publishers for the Empty Coffin young adult series. But mostly I would say I do, you know, a lot of the heavy lifting on my own because no one's going to do it better than me. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's really true. I don't know if it was always this way. You've been in this business a long time. But it seems like certainly now the writer, unless something really catches fire with the book, the writer is still, after readers sharing his work, which is still going to be your best piece of marketing, I think, of one reader saying to another, this is awesome, you know. But it still seems like these days the writer really is the, you know, you are the one leading the charge. You are the one drawing the attention. You are the one stimulating the excitement around it. It really all flows through you after the readers themselves.
It's kind of it's a little bit different for me with the young adult stuff because with my adult true crime or the adult suspense fiction, serial killer fiction that I've done, you know, I publish the book, and you know, the publisher publishes the book. We do a press release. I maybe get on radio and TV, and that's pretty much it. But with the young adult stuff, there's a much more active online community for young adult books. And like today, I have a blog tour that was put together by a blogger fan, and she's done a fantastic job of, you know, interviews and guest posts and this whole chain of things that she's got planned for the next 2 weeks. You know, you just don't find that in adult fiction. You don't find those uber fans out there that just want to do all this kind of stuff to promote it. So I'm really grateful for that, and I think it's a lot different than the adult things that I had done.
A fan did that for you. A fan?
Yeah, a blogger fan. She calls herself Jean Book Nerd, and
okay.
She's amazing. I mean, she did the graphics. She's got her husband doing some artwork. I mean,
wow.
She lives and breathes YA fiction, and she picks authors and she that she loves and then arranges for, you know, this massive Twitter blog tour that, you know, I'm really excited about. I'm really excited to be about, you know, to be in that because it's so different.
That's so awesome. That's wonderful. And let's fill our listeners in a little bit if they aren't familiar with your work. First there was Envy, which was your first entree into the YA world, and now Betrayal, which is the second, which is published, as you said, today. This is its debut day.
Right.
And you would describe these as...
They're mystery thrillers set in Port Gamble in Washington State, which is a really picture postcard, perfect little town.
Yeah.
Perfect, you know, to have some secrets behind every door. So I have twin protagonists, Haley and Taylor Ryan. They are, you know, the stars of the book, stars of the series, and when bad things happen, they want to figure out what it was and, you know, dig in deeper to their own storyline. So there's a little bit of paranormal. I tell people it's not werewolf.
Right.
It isn't vampire. It's more about the power of the mind.
Now, you had come from first, like I said, journalism, then true crime, and then serial killer fiction for adults. Obviously, no paranormal involved in that. Were you always sort of a fan of the paranormal? Did you say, no, I'm just going to adopt that? And did you have it within you? Where did that come from?
That's interesting. The paranormal that I always... I mean, I was not a paranormal fan. Like, there's a lot of people who watch all those ghost shows on the cable channels. I really am not that person. But I did enjoy reading, you know, ghost stories and, you know, stories of the fantastic when I was growing up. So I think that's where it comes from. And I loved being scared.
Yeah.
I think of one of the scariest books I ever read in fiction, of course, was The Exorcist.
I can't watch that movie. I watched that and it scared the bejesus out of me. Right.
Oh, my dad yanked that book out of my hand and threw it in the fireplace. Thought it was evil. So that's where
so
I came from. I mean, reading that kind of stuff and believing that, you know, maybe there are things we can't see and they're all around us. So that seemed like a natural progression, but no vampire.
You know, it's funny. One of the advice I always give writers, beginning writers, is to write what they most want to read. Write what the story they're dying to tell. And usually these choices aren't market driven. When I interviewed you after the release of Envy, which was maybe a year ago now, a year and a half ago.
Exactly a year.
Probably, yes. Probably was exactly a year, wasn't it? Yeah. So I interviewed you for that. And I said, why the young adult? And you said at the time, well, you know, it was a kind of a hot market, and I think it was maybe your publisher had suggested it, if I'm remembering the story correctly. But once you got into it, you loved it, didn't you? And
it really did come to me. It came to me in an unusual way in that I was asked to consider it, and
right.
I hadn't ever thought about it. But once I got into it, I felt like, wow, for the first time in my writing career, I'm using my natural voice. I'm not, you know, I'm true crime. You know, Bill, true crime is always someone else's story. You're telling it in the very best way that you can, and you're being true to the people and to what they were thinking and doing. So there's some creativity there, but a lot of it is, you know, the backbone is truth.
Yeah.
And with serial killer thriller fiction, I mean, it's basically, it is a formula, and it's fun to write. But something about writing for young adults and writing about young adult characters just carried me away. I mean, I can't tell you. It made it fun to be a writer again, more fun than anything I've ever done.
That's so awesome. And not only did it make it fun for you as a writer, it also, I would say, I guess you could say, made it fun for you as an author, because now, as everyone learns, once you have a young adult audience, they communicate with you. I mean, you've got a blogger fan setting up a tour for you. It's very unlikely to happen for an adult author. And you hear from them a lot.
Right. Yeah. The connection between reader and author in the young adult world is so different than anything I've ever done. You know, in the true crime stuff, I would do signings and I would meet the fans, and they were wonderful people. They were excited about the books and excited about the story. They weren't necessarily excited about, you know, where the story was going, because the story was over. You know, it was a murder story and the guy went to prison.
Right.
These writers that in the young adult deal are more, you know, they're open to the possibilities, suggestions, ideas, and things about what is possible. And I love that. I mean, they've inspired me in many ways.
That is just fantastic. And now I'd like you, if you could, to go back to that moment when, was it an editor who suggested it to you, doing the YA?
Right.
Okay, so go back to that moment. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, just know this editor in New York, she had read A Twisted Faith, which was my book about the Bremerton minister who murdered his wife a number of years ago. And the book came out, I think, a couple years ago. This gal, you know, in New York was reading the book, and she ran into somebody that I knew and said, you know, do you know this guy? We think he could do young adult stuff for us. Maybe true crime, maybe young adult fiction. Would, you know, can you make a meeting or whatever? And that's how it happened. I mean, it was a chance encounter with somebody, you know, this time an editor carrying around my book and another person who knew me talking to her.
Wow. All right. So now go back to that moment.
So that could,
up to this point.
So Bill, that could never happen today.
You don't think
it could
ever
happen today with a Nook. It
couldn't
happen today with a Nook or a Kindle because no one can see what they were reading.
That's right.
There you go.
That's so funny. Oh, so someone else was carrying and they saw it. Oh, I misunderstood. The editor saw it in someone else's hand. Oh, interesting. Okay, so, but here's Greg Olson, has never read YA. Were you reading much YA?
I read The Hunger Games, and seriously, that's all the YA of contemporary YA that I had read.
All right, so here
and
you
I
are.
Read
Greg Olson,
the first one.
Only writes for adults, and this is put to you. Now, did you have to commit, or did you say, let me flirt with it and see if I can do it? How did that go? Because you know what it is as a writer. Well, maybe not. Maybe you're a real pro and you'll finish anything. But a lot of writers can start something and realize, this ain't working. I can't do it. It just isn't me. How did you agree to it?
Well, I always have to finish it because I'm under contract and I just need that money.
Yeah.
I will finish the book.
Okay.
Because I've always said, you know, to me, writing is a job. If you were a contractor and you were hired to do someone's patio, you got to finish the job.
Right.
So I'm hired to write the book, and what happened was I had an unpublished novel, and I thought I really loved the characters in that particular book, and they were these twin girls. Their dad was a crime writer. It's very autobiographical that way. Dad was a crime writer, and something happened, you know, with one of his fans in his books, and it was a kind of a fun book, but I didn't sell it. And I wanted those characters to come back to life. And it was easy for me to jump in there and move Taylor and Haley to the forefront, push Dad in the back, and have it be their story with that little twist of paranormal. It just seemed to work.
That's awesome. And what I've always liked writing from the point of view of late teenagers. I've always thought that's a great age because they have a lot of the skills and mental wherewithal of an adult, but not necessarily encumbered by all their responsibilities.
Right.
Did
I always
find
tell
that
people
to be the
young
case
people
also?
Yes, I mean young people just haven't been beaten down like adults have.
They've got
they
so
still
much
want to dream.
Right.
They still believe things are possible and that they can be anything they want to be, and of course they can, but they are, you know, I mean, when you get to be a certain age, you look at the world differently. And you know, somebody asked me, they said, well, you know, you're 50-some years old, Greg. How could you write from the point of view of a teenager? Yeah. And my answer is this. I think everything they feel are all the things we felt. It's like our experiences may be different in terms of technology, but you've always felt like you either didn't fit in, maybe you were fat, maybe you were, you know, not good at sports, or maybe you were dumb, or whatever it is that you people might have thought about you. Those hurts are all the same, no matter what generation you're born in, and that's what you tap into, that universal angst of being a teenager. It's so real.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, the first time I read Catcher in the Rye, I was 40 years old, and you know, this was always trumpeted as the young adult book, and I said, okay, yes, it definitely deals with a young adult person's life, but to me, the themes were universal. The existential themes were absolutely applicable to me. And I think that one of the biggest differences between teenagers and adults, whenever I write either about myself when I was that age, because I do that a lot now, or about actual fictional characters, is that the one thing I have now that I didn't then is the sort of language and interior sophistication to express exactly what is happening to me, to understand what's happening. But the same things are happening, the same sense of betrayal and loss, like you said. But my ability
right.
to express it has matured.
That's right.
You know, and to navigate it. And, of course, don't you have to walk that line when you're writing them, that you don't make them, that you let them stay teenagers? Something a little adult sometimes.
Yeah. Here's the thing about it. I do feel I have sort of an ace up my sleeve with these characters in that they are, you know, they're sophisticated about crime because that's how their family, you know, lived their lives. They were, you know, immersed in crime because Dad was, and because of the books he was writing or the people that they knew. They knew the cops. They knew all that. So it makes it seem, you know, to me it's real and plausible where, you know, there may be some of the things they know someone would think, well, that seems a little adult-like, but not really. I mean, if it's your family business to grow raspberries, you're going to know everything about raspberry growing.
That's true. That's true. And I'm trying to remember from our earlier conversation whether you are an outliner or not. I seem to recall that maybe you are. Do I remember?
I do sort of a synopsis, not an outline. I do a synopsis on where I think the story's going. And, of course, with a series, you have to be very careful about plotting because you kind of don't want to write yourself into a corner.
Yes.
So it's a synopsis. It's not a true outline. I do feel that when I'm writing, the storyline does change and shift, and the characters do take on their own role, their own significance that I would not have known or thought of if I had just written an outline and stuck with it.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about
it. Are you an outliner?
Am I an outliner? I am not. And, in fact, I have learned that, to me, an outline and following an outline is kind of like trying to plan a conversation before I have it. You know, so I might think about my conversation I'm going to have with you, for instance, on this show. And I've got the things I'm going to say, and I can certainly start there, but then you speak. And I can't. And no matter how well I plan what I'm going to say, you're not going to follow any script I might have given myself ahead of time. And the book feels the same way. I sit down, I've got this plan, and then somehow, I guess you could say, the book speaks to me. And
that's right.
I often don't predict it, can't predict it.
That's really well said, because I do think all of us, you know, if we have a big presentation or something, we get that first little bit in our head that we're going to start with.
Right.
And we think we know where it's going to go, but you have to be quick enough and agile enough to go with the crowd or go with the other, just the other person you're talking to. Or it seems like it's all scripted, and of course it's not, because, you know, books are like conversations. It's a conversation between the writer and the characters.
It is. And it's hard, you know, it's so interesting to me because a lot of writers are very practical people in a lot of ways. You need to be almost, because you have to go put your butt in the chair every day, just like you said, it's a job, and to some degree you're kind of chopping wood. But when you get to actually talking about the writing, I don't care what your beliefs about the world and the universe and our lives are, you start sounding a little mystical. You start talking about things speaking to you. Who's speaking to you? It's just you with it. But no, that's how it feels, doesn't it?
Right. It absolutely does. I used to laugh at people. I would go to like a reading or whatever and hear somebody talk about their characters
right.
in that way.
Yes.
And I never got it. I always thought, well, come on, it is something you just
right.
made up. What do you mean?
Right.
You know, and I do feel differently, especially with a series. They do, because when I've written the first book, I know there's another one with these same people. So they're not done on the end. There's more to come, and they do seem more lifelike then because of that.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing, but it is. I see it again and again. I've got a caller who I think has a question for us. I think I know who it is, but let's see what he has to say, shall we, Greg? Let's check in.
Sure.
Is this Jeffrey?
It is, Bill. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Another stellar interview. I hope you had a wonderful, relaxing weekend. But knowing writers, we don't have days off or even sick time.
I worked. I did the same thing I did every day. Well, we are so lucky to have Greg on today. He's a very experienced guy, Jeffrey also hosts a Blog Talk Radio interview show, an excellent one. And did you have a question for
Olson?
I did.
The YA genre, I wondered what attracted you to that, Greg. Something you always are interested in. It's a great growing market. There's so many writers that have made that transition from adult writing to are also including both, and all, but going to the young adult. What attracted you to that, and what's your real interest in that?
Well, now, unfortunately, you know what just happened? Accidentally, it looked like somehow we lost Greg. I guess his phone got cut off. So what we're going to do is I'm going to hope he's going to call back. I assume he did. Now, I'm going to answer that question a little bit while I have you on the phone, Jeffrey. Greg was very interesting in that he was asked by a New York editor who had read some of his adult fiction if he would like to take a swing at young adult fiction. And he said, well, okay, it was a very hot market, you know. It's been a hot market for a little while. And so he gave it a swing, and he loved it. He just loved it, to his own surprise. He's a practical man, and he did it somewhat as a marketing decision. And yet, to his delight, he actually liked doing it. Oh, I think we've got him back. Let's see here. Oh. Hold on.
Thank you, Bill, for taking my question.
Oh,
welcome
no problem.
Back,
all right, Greg, we've got you back.
I'm back. I did not do anything. It just dropped me.
Oh, those lousy. Well, you know, I kind of answered his question for you, and I think Jeffrey might have missed some of our early conversation when you were talking about the editor finding you and giving you the suggestion and so on. Is there anything you want to add to that decision to write young adult that we didn't talk about earlier?
Well, one thing Jeffrey was kind of alluding to, a lot of writers are sort of jumping into this bandwagon, it seems, that there are a lot of adult mystery suspense authors like me trying it out, seeing whether or not we'll be successful. And I don't know that all of us will, or that even I will be successful at it. There are, the readers are different. They are not the same as our regular adult reader.
Right.
And the authors may be highly skilled, but maybe they'll miss what the reader's looking for and not be able to succeed there. And we've seen probably, oh gosh, every month it seems like there's a new adult author with a entry into the YA field.
Yeah. I do think you have to, some part of you has to understand, and you may not know that you understand it until you give it a whirl, but you have to understand what that reader, if you were that reader, what you would want. Because to some degree, even though you're writing for a YA audience, they're not there in the room with you. It's still just you. And so there's some part of you that knows what they want, that feels what they want, that isn't a fan himself, you know, because they can't be there with you.
I was thinking, Bill, like one of the things that's different is that a lot of YA fiction is in the first person.
Yes.
And my series is not. And I think if I do more YA after the Empty Coffin series, that my next book will be in first person, because I do think that is what the convention of the genre, what they prefer. They want to be immediate in the moment with the I did this, whoever the character is. And I get that, and I respect that, and I can't wait to try it. I've never written in first person.
You've never written in first person?
Never.
Wow. Never. And you're going to give it a whirl. I love first person.
It sort of scary in a way, isn't it?
Oh, so you're not scared of The Exorcist, but you're scared of first person.
I was scared of The Exorcist, by
the way. Okay, good. What was the scariest part of, now, of course, you can't get any more, you know, spooky than The Exorcist. You can't get any more paranormal than The Exorcist. What was the scariest part of that for you? What part creeped
you out?
It's
hard to separate the movie from the book.
Right.
So I think the scariest part, and I went to a movie over the weekend with one of my daughters. We went to see The Possession, which was another demonic possession, this time from a Jewish point of view. And it was the number one best movie of the week. So,
oh, it was?
It won the box office, but it was not that good of a movie. But the whole idea of somebody of evil possessing some other person, that always gets me. It's the idea that, you know, a good, and especially if it's a child, and that book, The Exorcist, and the movie I saw over the weekend, it was a child who inadvertently let a demon inside, and of course wreaked havoc and all that stuff. So I do think when innocence is stolen by something really evil, and it could be, you know, in my true crime books, it might be a pedophile or somebody stealing that innocence, of course. Or, you know, if it's something more fantastical, it's a demon.
So interesting, of course, because with you, the early part of your career, I mean, whether one believes in evil or not, you were writing about actual people who had done the sorts of things that get labeled evil. I mean, you were dealing with the true crime where people actually did these terrible, creepy, sort of awful things. And so you became immersed in the reality of it first, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And but I did believe in evil then, too. I did think that there was something, you know, some force at work with these people to, and I always tell people this, you know, in any true crime book that I've written or anyone that I've read, whoever the perpetrator is was on the road a long time before they did that evil act. And lots of the times, or almost, I'd say 100% of the times, a lot of evil was done to them to get them to be that person.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know,
I have to agree.
You know, it's not like you were going to go out there and slaughter a bunch of people, I don't think, Bill.
I'm not planning on it.
But, I mean, and I'm not saying everybody that's had horrible things done to them becomes a killer, but I do believe if you look at their life, and that's what the best true crime books do, examine the perpetrator's life and just see what it is that put them on that path. And I can tell you, it's almost from babyhood.
Yes, I agree. And there's a great teacher that I like to listen to, and I know you were a journalist, but one of her complaints about the news is, and I have to agree with this, is that it is trauma out of context. Because true crime is trying to put it into context, essentially. Like, this didn't just grow out of the ground. This was a part of a whole life. And whether they had to respond that way or not, it was a part of that whole life, that chain that led them there. And often the news, as well-intentioned as it is, cannot bring the full context of what brought that startling event that they tell us about in 30 seconds into context, I don't think. And so it's nice with the true crime to give a full sense to it.
Right. I mean, right now I'm working on a new true crime. I'm working on the Josh Powell, Susan Powell case, which was very big here in the Northwest. It's
a woman
who disappeared in Utah. And, of course, Josh murdered their children and killed himself a year ago in February. And that's a really good example. I mean, we think we know that story because it was covered quite a bit.
Right.
On the news, Dateline, everybody, I had the creepy father-in-law. We had all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm here to tell you that it's not the story. There's so much more to it. And, of course, that's what a really good book will give you, that the news can't, that nuance and that background that they just don't have time for.
How could they? Look at your own life. I mean, your life, you haven't lived the life of a true crime person, but would you want your life told in the limited detail that even the flattering detail of a news story? They can't do it. Your life is so full. Everyone's, my 17-year-old son's life is already too full for the news to really cover, you know, because a life is too many details.
That's right, and you're right. Everything is a bold brushstroke, for sure.
Yeah, it's the best you can really do. And, of course, as a writer, as a fiction writer in particular, even though you're trying to you give context to your story, you're having to pick details, aren't you? Because you can't give them all. You have to pick the critical details that hopefully suggest the whole, because you can't do it all yourself.
That's right. And you're not only the critical details, the details that resonate with you.
Yeah.
Because I am bringing my own experiences to each book, as you know. I mean, it's a true story. It is a fair and accurate book, but I have my own interests.
Yeah.
And the own way of looking at things that's going to filter all that material onto the page for the reader. I try to be fair, and I want it to be right, but I think, you know, even though it's all true, the writer has an impact there for sure.
That's an excellent note on which to end the show. Greg, thank you so much. This was a real treat.
Hey, Bill, thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed the interview.
Oh, my pleasure. And good luck with Betrayal. Get out there and get it, folks.
All right.
You know it's going to be scary.
All right.
Good luck, Greg.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
And thank you all for listening. I'm going to be in Los Angeles next week talking to some folks on Tuesday, and so I'm not going to be able to do this show. But I will be back the week afterwards talking to, I believe we're going to be talking to CeCe Humphreys, the one and only, and that should be fun. So have a good week off. I know I will. In the meantime, do what you love. You really can't go wrong. Not at all.